Good morning. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'm going to read further the chapter about botanist Jim Zimmerman from Sumner Madison's book A Field today. If you haven't heard the first part of my reading about Jim, I hope you will look at the WDRT podcast archives and listen to Natural Wonders number 14. I talk there a little bit about my indirect but consequential relationship with this great man. One of the many reasons I find Jim's words in this interview so compelling is that he is so interested in teaching effectively and creatively. He knew well and had as teachers some of Wisconsin's great naturalists like Aldo Leopold and Norman Fassett, and he describes their teaching methods. For this book, he was interviewed in 1981 and 82 by Sumner Madison, who, with clear foresight, documented many great Wisconsin naturalist lives. And he still continues to do interviews today for future volumes of A Field. We all benefit from this decades-long devoted effort. The book is called A Field, published by Little Creek Press, and is available on Amazon or from Little Creek Press in Mineral Point, Wisconsin. Jim died in 1992. Here is more of the interview. Probably the most important influence on me, however, was UW-Madison botany professor Norman Fassett. He was an extremely fine teacher as well as a dedicated conservationist. It has been said, although it's only rumor, that he influenced Leopold more than anyone else. Since Fassett was a botanist, I ate up everything he taught. He taught in a remarkable way. He had a sense of the dramatic, and every lecture he pounded home a single point. He threw his whole self into a lecture. There were deep ideas, not shallow ones, and often it took a long time for the students to understand what he was trying to say. But he would get across his feelings about these things as well as good scientific information. I was with Fassett for 10 years, 5 years as an undergraduate and 5 years as a graduate student. My master's was titled A Key to Sedges. The herbarium was in such disarray at the time that I didn't know which species were correctly identified, so I wasted a couple of years until I got that in order. People began to grumble, saying, "When is Jim Zimmerman ever going to leave college? A perennial student." But I was just having a ball. Fassett and Leopold were role models for me. I think about two-thirds of teaching as being a role model for people. The other third is enthusiasm for your subject. Leopold, a very charming but earnest person, was the third major influence. He lived only two blocks away. His daughter Nina knew of me, but I didn't remember her. I wasn't really aware of the Leopold family until I took his course. He taught in some ways like Fassett because he made you think creatively. His first exercise threw me for a loop. He had a bunch of pictures of trees that had lost their lower branches over a pond. How? To deer. Why? Well, you were supposed to figure out how the deer got out there. The answer, quite naturally, was that they walked out there and browsed off the branches, which told you that the pond had frozen over. Leopold's teachings sparked my interest in phenology. I have maintained a daily record of natural events continuously from 1943 to the present. They're records from a variety of different places in and around Madison. At the Arboretum, for example, I kept records for 8 years from the late 40s through the 50s after taking Leopold's course. I biked to the Arboretum twice a week and tried to cover every part and then started over again. I watched over 800 species of plants. I kept records of their unfolding, blooming, seeding, and fall color. I kept records of the arrival, nesting, hatching, fledging, and song dates of over 75 species of birds. I also observed turtles, frogs, snakes, and insects. Leopold knew this was good training, and I have my students do it now. They have to take an area and tell me what's happening each week. It took me 2 years of keeping phenological records before I realized that I was changing my way of life. I studied upstairs with the window open and stopped if I heard a bird outside. I'd spend the whole morning chasing the darn bird down if I couldn't identify it. I think I've learned more by teaching than I did as a student. The learning has come from trying to explain things in a way that will reach others. I've found that one of the most difficult tasks has been to communicate my understanding of ecology to students. Values are just as important as facts, but when I launch into developing philosophical ideas about nature, I've lost a good many people because they aren't trained to listen for more than 5 minutes. So the way I maneuver around that is to get people involved, get people out looking at a field and see how many kinds of grasses they can find. Then they come back with unanswered questions and an appetite for another lecture from me. In this way, they develop their own powers of concentration and observation. It's ironic, but when I was in grade school having all those troubles, the biggest criticism I received was that I didn't concentrate on anything. But that was because I was so nervous and upset. Once I could do my own thing, I spent hours doing one thing and didn't get tired. I've noticed that as I train students to become more perceptive, I've become sharper myself. And every time you do something with somebody else, you have to know more than they do. When you're out in the field, you have to be one step ahead, so you keep working hard to understand and interpret more. Becoming a naturalist means establishing a 50-50 interplay between receiving information through reading, listening, studying, and receiving information by learning directly from nature through personal observation. I tell my students to go out on the weekend, look at a marsh, and then tell me what they saw. And when we talk about things in class, they learn more, but even better, get students to teach each other. You know, Leopold asked me in his first oral quiz how I recognized a field sparrow without hearing it first. I didn't remember the pink bill. I'll always remember that. He conducted these personal oral quizzes so that he could get to know you. As an example of his charm, instead of sitting there like he was going to grill you, he'd come in and first ask you for your advice on something. Once when I came in, the first thing he said was, "You're working with Facet over in botany. I've got a problem with my research on plants near the shack. Can you tell me what this plant is?" Knowing the student's background, he would ask a particular question of each student. He was extremely clever in putting you at ease, and he was sincere, too. It wasn't just a put-on for show. He did want to know, but he wouldn't ask the student who knew the most about the question, but the student who would grow the most in answering that question. In other words, he tailored every single question to a particular personality. That takes talent. At 6 weeks, Leopold insisted on having a personal interview with everybody in his class. He had 40 people. It must have taken him all week. Instead of having a particular week when my students see me, they just come in when they're ready and I get to see them all. This is extremely important to me. A fourth major influence was Paul Olson, a conservationist, former high school teacher, and principal. My first job as a naturalist in the Madison School Forest was under his supervision. Paul understood people. He always made you feel as if you were the greatest person in the world, and without you, his program couldn't fly. He taught me perhaps as much about human psychology as any one person. He didn't have a strong education, yet he picked up the ethics of Leopold and the philosophy of conservation. In a sense, he outdid Leopold. He'd get out in the woods with high school kids and inspire them with a little lecture of his own, and he had a vision. He's the one who, with the Hammerstroms, saved the prairie chicken in Wisconsin through superb salesmanship. The fifth person who influenced me was Lowell Noland. I first met him through his son Wayland, a chemistry professor in the Twin Cities. Wayland was a loner, and he and I hit it off in high school. He was one of the maybe five friends I had in high school and college. At the university, I took freshman zoology in 1943, and Lowell taught me that course. He was probably the finest teacher I ever had in that he was a stickler for good work, but at the same time, he had the milk of human kindness. more than anyone I ever met. He was gentle. The students loved him. The best thing about his teaching was that he always respected your ideas. If you didn't like an idea, he'd turn it around and come up with a better one. One of the things that Noland would do to prepare for lectures was manicure his yard. He'd weed his yard by hand, get out there on all fours, and dig into his dandelions while thinking about his lecture. Almost every lecture was related to some personal story, which of course is a very good technique. On top of that, it was always fresh. It was always something that he had thought about only a few hours earlier. Leopold did this too. Both of these men were excited about new ideas, and they were always eager to share them with us. This, of course, kept everyone on the edge of their chairs. Students wouldn't miss their lectures. Attendance wasn't a problem. And I'll stop reading now and continue next time with more of Jim Zimmerman. This is Maggie Jones. Thank you so much for listening.